about 7 years. Hasn't always been easy. And they have a very tender moment. Kim is in the hospital, and the fact is she's rather rapidly dying. And Matt's by her bed, and Kim says, "Matt, there's something that I really have to tell you." "Oh, no, honey, save your strength. You don't need to talk." "No," she says, "you don't understand. I've got something I've got to get off my chest. I've got to say to you. Honey, it's not important. No, I did something wrong. It's okay. Don't worry about it. I love you. Don't worry about it. I'm going to say this, Matt. I was unfaithful to you. There's been somebody else." Matt said, "Honey, don't worry. I know all about that. Why do you think I poisoned you?" Let's talk about sex. In the I said to Cindy one day, my wife, this thing about talking about intimacy to a mixed group like this, that's a very challenging thing to do. Can you imagine anything more challenging than that? And she said, "Yeah, being married to the man who's making such a speech. I think that's challenging," and I'd have to agree with her on that. The Bible is, of course, very clear about marriage implying sexuality, that married people have intimacy. And so you have Romans chapter 1, which is a key passage, not the only one, that utterly condemns the practice of homosexuality. We could talk about that some other time. But anyway, it references the wife, and it says the natural use of the woman. And it's talking about sex. But anyway, I think it's interesting that it uses the word natural. It's natural in the sense that God defines nature. He defines what is natural. When you get to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, you have this discussion by Paul. And to avoid fornication is a broad word that would include adultery, homosexuality, all kind of deviant behaviors sexually. Fornication is sex between two people who aren't married to one another, etc. But he said to avoid sinful sex, let every man have his own wife, let every woman have her own husband. Now, what I want to do in this session is talk about 10 secrets. There are 5 things that you cannot change, 5 things that you can change, and hopefully this will be helpful, educational. 5 things that you can't change. 1, in all marriages, you're going to have a difference in frequency, or in what I'm calling a frequency imbalance. Don't think that you're unusual about that in your marriage. And typically the way it is, of course, is that the man needs intimacy more frequently than his wife. In fact, studies have been done, 85%, I'm told, 85% of the marriages, the man's need for frequency is greater than his wife's. Now, I don't want you to feel like then, if that's the way in your marriage, that your husband is somehow oversexed. The fact that he has this need. For a man, there's a biological process, of course, going on. And it's not so different from the need for food. I understand that one is necessary to sustain life. Sex is not too far from that, though, in a man's mind. And he has this biological process that makes him need intimacy with some frequency. Biblically, we have the answer to the question, how often is appropriate? How would you answer that question? What does the Bible say about that? And the answer, of course, is that it doesn't give a number. It doesn't give that. People are different. Couples are different. But what it does do is rather remarkable. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. It says that when you marry, and I'm paraphrasing, when you get married, that your body belongs to your spouse. You're turning your sexuality over to your spouse. All right, so it's made for mutual fulfillment. To the degree that, he says, don't defraud one the other. He's talking about sex when he says, don't defraud. The word defraud means to take something that doesn't belong to you. To defraud would be, we'll talk about it some more in a few minutes, but the point is that if I deny my spouse intimacy, that the way this passage views that is to steal. It is to take something that doesn't belong to me. It used to belong to me, and then I married, and now it doesn't. Now this belongs to my spouse. Now, I mean, how many times do you think a young wife has been shocked by her husband's need for frequency? Again? Again? Already? Again? Didn't we just do that? And yet I want you to understand that it's natural for there to be an imbalance about frequency. Now here's the second thing that you cannot change. Oh, I should turn this on. There we go. Sex is not optional in his mind. I want you to think about the scriptures, Old and New Testaments. This is fascinating to me. Now, ladies, he's different from you. Now, you know that, but I just want you to think about it from this perspective. You go to the Old Testament, you read in the book of Genesis about verse chapter 30, and Jacob has these two wives, Rachel and Leah, and they're out in the field because one of the boys has found some mandrake roots, remember? Now, I don't know. They believed at that time that the mandrakes increased fertility. I don't even know how you would use them. Do you boil the roots into a tea? Do you put the things under the bed? I don't know what you do with the mandrakes, but they believed it increased fertility. And so here you have Rachel and Leah arguing about who's going to get the mandrakes and sleep with him that night. What is interesting to me is that it was not a matter of dispute about whether or not intimacy would occur that night. One of us is going to go to bed with him, and whoever that is going to have intimacy. I think that's very interesting. When you get to the book of Proverbs, you have a baker's dozen passages of cautions about sex, and in particular about prostitution and that sort of thing. In all of those cases, every one is gender specific. And it's all about warning a man about controlling himself with reference to prostitutes and so forth. But the aggressor, the one who is pushing for this, is always described as the man. Fascinating. When you get to the New Testament and you read passages about modest apparel, have you ever thought about the fact that they're all gender specific? All of them are gender specific. Run them through your mind. Matthew 5 and 28, whoever looks on a woman to lust after. Wouldn't it be wrong for a man or a woman to look at a man and lust after him? Well, yeah, it would be wrong. But he didn't portray it that way. And the reason is that that's not the real big picture. The big picture is that typically it's a man who will have trouble looking at other women. Whoever looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Or you have 1 Timothy chapter 2, modest apparel. Who's that in reference to? The women. So it's about the women. Isn't it right for a man to dress modestly too? Yes, but when you have the scriptures portraying or describing or warning about this, it's always gender specific. Why is that? Because God created a man with a biological process. He's going to come home at the end of the day and he's wanting supper and he's wanting intimacy, and not necessarily in that order, right? And I'm raising this because it may be a frustration sometimes in the mind of his wife. Well, I'm going to talk about more details, but I want you to get this. Sex is not optional in his mind. It's very much like the need for food. Three, sex, or sin rather, poisons great sex. Now, I want to revisit 1 Corinthians chapter 7, that your body doesn't belong to you, it belongs to your spouse. That's really important. Fornication, adultery will poison your relationship. But so will pornography. It's not right that your spouse, your wife, would be making love with you, but wondering if your mind was on some other woman whose image you have seen. That's not right. What it does is defraud something here. You belong to her and she belongs to you. And your perspective has to be that I only have eyes for you. I belong to you and you belong to me. And it's the, frankly, it's the privacy. I've always thought that it was interesting in 1 Timothy chapter 2 that wives were told to be chaste and discreet. It's not just don't have sex with another man. It's that in reference to your sexuality, you ought to be guarded about this. And really, this is so very private. And it makes the intimacy of marriage so much better because it's so private. You know what? This is about my spouse and me. This is a world of our intimacy. It's interesting that you know, when Mary was told she was going to have a child, she said, "How can this be, saying I've known not a man. The word intimacy means inmost. It means to know at a very intimate, private, personal level. And we keep that rather, we need to keep that private between ourselves, spouses. This is something that we share. And it draws us closer together. I would also remind you of this. The purpose of sex in marriage. You might say that God put sex in marriage for procreation, that was the number one thing. Wrong. That's not right. And I would urge that long after the childbearing years, couples still enjoy a healthy sex life. The primary purpose of intimacy in marriage wasn't procreation. It was to draw husbands and wives closer together. And this maddening need that a husband, particularly a young one, has for intimacy with his wife. Why do you think God did that? I asked Cindy one day, how come you think that God didn't make women as attracted to the male form as the man is attracted to the female form? And she didn't flinch. She said, who would raise the kids? I thought it was pretty good. Why do you think God did it the way that he did? Why did he put this drive? And then both husbands and wives have a sexual drive, but the husband's is greater. Why did he do that? And the answer is to draw husbands and wives closer together. It's that you can have a fuss with your spouse, but if you're living normally with a normal sex life, you just he can't be apart from her very long before he's just drawn to her, and it's a motivation to settle the fuss. Well, I'm telling you that if you withdrew the intimacy of marriage from marriages today, it would spell disaster for many, if not most, of the marriages. You know, there's a difference. Some of you went to college. Remember a college roommate? I had a couple of college roommates. I put up with them. They put up with me. Could we have lived together for the rest of our lives? Not a chance. Not, because you know what? I mean, well, you know. But a wife is different. A wife is different. And part of that picture, God did it, was to make sure y'all can't be apart for very long because you need each other, and in particular, that husband needs his wife. Masturbation is a sin inside of marriage. I'm asked this question from time to time, and I'm very discreet about where I talk about this. This is a climate today in which it can be discussed. The Bible in the New Testament, let me say it this way, the New Testament does not prohibit this in unmarried people. That doesn't mean that it's a good practice. It does prohibit the sin of lust. And lust of the mind is something that typically would accompany this action. And so, and then there's the issue that Paul said that he wouldn't be brought under the power of any. And so you also have the issue of a habit being formed. And so you have negative issues attached to this for the unmarried that need to be discussed. But when you shift over into marriage, you have a whole new issue, which is, again, 1 Corinthians 7, that your body does not belong to you. Now, that has clear ramifications with reference to personal gratification, masturbation. So I would suggest to you that once you marry, that would clearly be biblically a sin. That's to be avoided. Your sexuality belongs to your spouse, period. Belongs to your spouse. Pornography poisons great sex. What I have to do is to make sure. Do you know about your wife, and she has eyes in the back of her head. You know that, and you know that when y'all are in public, that she watches your eyes. Gentlemen, you know you're at a restaurant, and this little skinny thing walks by in her short shorts, her shorty shorts, and you think your wife doesn't watch to see how you watch that girl? Huh? Do you follow her with your eyes? Mm-hmm. You're in the mall and you walk by Victoria's Secret. You think your wife doesn't pay attention to your eyes? You want to do yourself a favor, gentlemen? Intimacy is enhanced by living a pure life. And by pure, I mean in this context. Your wife needs to know that you are only for her and that she takes care of you. She takes care of you. Ladies, make sure that you have a well-fed husband. Before I go to that one, your husband You know what your husband does when supper's late? What does he do? Supper's late, so sometimes even in the house, you know, supper's late. He goes to the pantry or to the refrigerator. Do you ever see your husband standing in the with the refrigerator door open? And just kind of look, and maybe he scoots things over a little bit. He's looking for a snack. He's just hungry. Supper's late. The longer a husband goes without intimacy with his wife, the more difficult it becomes for him to keep his mind and eyes pure. That is not justification for a man to do the wrong thing about anything. I'm just saying that the volume, if you please, gets louder and louder in his ears the longer he's away from his spouse in this way. All right, here's number next. Things you can't change. A husband never gets tired of seeing his wife unclothed. I don't think a woman understands this fully. I understand that a wife is attracted to her husband physically in some ways, but I believe that it's little league by comparison to what a man, how a man's attracted to his wife. We're just different about this. If y'all are getting dressed in the morning and she comes out of the shower and he happens to be standing there, I mean, his whole world goes dark and all he can just do is focus on his wife. His mouth is agape. He just zooms in, right? But if it's in the reverse and he gets out of the shower, it's different. You know, she says, "You're getting water on the floor. Stand on the mat." Right? Now, you know I'm right. I don't want you to think, ladies, that your husband is oversexed or something's wrong with him because he wants to look at you. And furthermore, we as Christians want our husbands to be pure in their minds like we've been describing. And I expect him then to avoid all pornography. I expect him to keep his eyes off those billboards with those almost naked women. I expect him, you know, as a wife, I expect my husband to be pure and I'm his only sexual outlet. But that being the case, you should celebrate the fact that he enjoys looking at you. Don't resist that. Don't chastise him. You know, you're getting dressed and you realize he's over there and he's watching you. Stop that. Or you know, you're just really always so cautious about your robe. And when you walk by him, why don't you let your robe come open sometime and let the man see you? Why don't you celebrate that? And you say, "Well, I'll tell you why. Because we got stuff to do today, and if I let it, you know, because we're going to spend a lot of time here. If you know, I understand." Well, no, that's not really true. I don't, you know what? If you have a well-fed husband, then letting him enjoy seeing you is not going to do what I just said. Sometimes it will, but a well-fed husband can look at you and enjoy you and should be able to enjoy you. You know, when you bend over this way or that way and you look and there he is, he's watching you, you could chastise him and fuss at him and you're oversexed or whatever and you'll hurt him. Or you can just linger there a little longer knowing that he's watching you. What are you doing? I'm celebrating the fact that my husband only has eyes for me. I'm celebrating the fact that we're married and this intimacy is just us. Nobody else is this. This is our marriage. We love each other and we share this together. And I'm not depriving him. I'm going to make sure. I wish every wife in here would see, if you haven't made this vow in your heart, make the vow. I'm going to make sure my man's well fed. Because I want a great marriage. All right? Number five, you can't change that all wives carry a sarg. That's a manufactured word. It's not a real word. But it means sex affection ratio gauge. Now, gentlemen, it goes like this. Your wife has a gauge inside of her by which she measures how much you love her for her mind and personality and being and how much you love her just for her body. And some of you have heard your wife say, I mean, I haven't been told this, but I make this assumption. Some of you have heard your wife say, "I think you just love me for one thing." Did you ever hear your wife say that? Don't answer. What you must do is to make sure that you are providing affection to your wife, not merely sex. She notices this. She notices. And so the kinds of things that we talked about last night. And if you weren't here last night, you need to get the CD or you need to listen online so that you'll understand what I'm saying. And I don't want to repeat all of that. But she defines affection differently from you. And when she defines affection, I'm telling you, it has little to do with sex. That's you. You're the man, and she's the woman. And so what you need to do, when you're walking with her along at the mall or wherever, hold her hand. What about opening doors for her? How are you doing on that, guys? Huh? How are you doing? I mean, you know, in some marriages, you did it when you were dating her. Well, keep dating her. You know, so some men, you know, they're more apt to open the door for a stranger than for their wives. You stop that now. Wait a minute. You're going to mess up here. Now, wives, I talk about this sometimes to husbands. I want you to start opening the door for your wife. I mean the car door. Both times, getting in and getting out. I want you to do that. You say, oh, well, why should we do? We've been married a long time, and she can open the door herself. I know she can open the door. I know that. My point is that you need to rekindle some of that romance. We're in the context of intimacy. We're talking about sex in this session. And I'm saying to you that your wife wants to know that you care about her, not just because she has a body, but because she's a person who you love. Now look, ladies, your husband this afternoon is going to open your door on the car. And when he does, I want you to make sure that you wait for him. Man gets out of the car, and before he can get around, she's already out, right? Well, just sit and wait. Now, he may go in the house, but he's going to realize directly, he'll realize, where is that woman? Oh, yes, we went to a marriage seminar. And you'll just be sitting there, but you can look at your cell phone or whatever as you wait. But he'll come around. Why should a man do that? And the answer is it's about intimacy. And that intimacy is not just about sex. And that when y'all are taking a long walk together and you see a big old oak tree, take her behind the tree and kiss her good. Don't waste an oak tree. Why is that? And when you buy her those flowers, now I want to get you a way of thinking here, gentlemen. This is a way of thinking. And we're talking about intimacy. It's important. But work hard to get her those flowers, not just on the days when you anticipate intimacy. She can read you like a book, you know? Pops up with those flowers. And what you're thinking is, I went to that seminar and we talked about affection. I'm showing her some affection. What she's thinking is, he wants to take me to bed, and so he's got me these flowers. So what you do, now I'm not saying that you should never get her flowers on those days, but what I'm saying is make sure that you don't do that exclusively. So you ought to get her flowers sometimes on a day when you don't anticipate intimacy. You just do it because you love her. She has a SARG, sex affection ratio gauge. Now, let's shift gears. Let's talk about some things that you can change. One, who initiates? Now, in most marriages, because you have this frequency need and imbalance and the husband has a greater need, then it is more typical in marriage for the husband to do most of the initiating. My suggestion is this, ladies. You communicate a huge thing to your husband when you initiate. There's something in him that will sometimes worry that she only does this with me because she's a Christian. And she knows that this is part of marriage. And so she does this with me, but not because she's necessarily attracted to me. When you initiate intimacy, and I don't think you should do it all the time, but sometimes, and when you initiate it, what you're communicating to him is, I am attracted to you, and I do love you. And it shows, and I know this may seem a stretch, but I believe that it would show him a high degree of respect. Sex for a man is very much like your phone charger. I don't mean to be crude, but your phone at the end of the day is drained down and you need to plug it in and it charges it back up, and sex does that for a man physically but also psychologically. It sets the ship aright. So, you know, the boss has been breathing down my neck. He's always micromanaging me, but not only that, the van, that transmission's rattling and we're going to have to borrow money to fix the transmission. And not only that, that toilet upstairs overflowed today. What a mess. He's not on his game. But he goes and spends some time with you and has healthy relations with you, and it sets his world straight. I'm telling you, it after intimacy, don't you find often that your husband will say something to you like, I think I'll start that new project tomorrow, or I've been meaning to ask my boss for a raise. I think I'll ask him tomorrow. I deserve that raise. And suddenly he's just, you know, it just sets the ship aright. It straightens things out. Now, what I want you to do then is, ladies, I want you to sometimes initiate. So you go to somebody's house, maybe for supper or something, and as he's ringing the doorbell, I want you to just lean up and say, and whisper in his ear, when we get home tonight, this is what I've got planned for you. Bing bong. And you watch him, you know, he's all through the evening. Boy, I tell you how time flies. We got to be getting home. Or what if you send him private emails, or make sure it's very private, or maybe slip a note in his pocket. Sometimes when you get home, this is my plan for you. Now listen, ladies, I can promise you, your man is not going to get anything done that day for thinking about you. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? I'm not suggesting, again, that you initiate all the time. I'm saying that you should initiate sometimes, just out of the blue. I want you to take proper safeguards. By that I mean, if you have kids, make sure you have a good lock on the bedroom door. You don't want to be together and worry that somebody's going to pop in. We have some friends at West Huntsville, and they have a 13-year-old daughter. Cute little girl, so sweet. And anyway, she'd been feeling a little anxious lately. I don't know about what, but she was. Sometimes at night she likes to sleep on a pallet in her parents' room. And the husband, he's a great Christian man. Anyway, came home kind of late from work. The lights were all out, and he hopped into bed, and he started saying things to his wife. And his wife held up a hand to say, no, don't. Because he didn't know the little girl was on the floor over there. And so he thought the wife was teasing him. And he kept on, and directly that little head popped up. And she said, oh, gross. So put a lock on the door and make this private. And what I'm saying is find ways to sometimes initiate. Here's the second one. You can change the routine of utter predictability. Husbands and wives are different about this too. And what I want to suggest is that you might find a book that you can read together privately on this subject. I would recommend that if you decide to do this, that the wife be the one to go and purchase it. A lot of that stuff is garbage. It's pornography. And so let the wife go to Books A Million or wherever and find one that's tastefully done, but that you can enjoy reading together. It will say a lot to both of you, and to the husband. What it says is, I don't just tolerate your need for sex. I'm your wife, and I enjoy our sexual life together. That's what it will say, and that's a good thing to say. Now, a wife may, and couples are all different, but sometimes a wife, you know, prefers the predictability, what is comfortable, and so it's kind of a repetitive kind of action. And a husband may like that most of the time, but sometimes he, you know, he thinks in more of an adventure kind of way. And that's not wrong. I'm asked this question sometimes. What kinds of activities between a husband and wife in this context would be wrong? And the New Testament doesn't give such specifics, but it gives general principles, and one would be, I would summarize it this way. You should do nothing with or to your spouse that hurts her physically or spiritually or emotionally. What you do is practice the golden rule. Do not hurt your spouse in any way. And that's a good guideline. All right, let's go to the next one. The routine of utter predictability. Sometimes your husband, you know, you're going to be on a long hike somewhere, and he's going to initiate, and not out here, but maybe you could find a private place. And if you do, let me tell you what's going to happen. You know, maybe a little out of your comfort zone. Be sure that you find a very private place. But when you're 80 years old, and he's not long for this world, he's going to eke out these words, "Remember the hike?" Okay, here's number three. Oh, there's some books that I forgot to put this up. Here's a couple of books that I would recommend to you that you can get on Amazon that you might find useful and that you might enjoy reading together. Sheet Music by Kevin Lehman, The Gift of Sex by Clifford and Joyce Penner. All right. Number three, things that you can change. How well you communicate to your wife that she's all you need. I'm not going to replow ground, but this is something that you must do. You've got to do those things I talked about last night and communicate with her. It's kind of funny, when I have a couple come in, in counseling, sex is a rather important gauge to know the health of the marriage. If the sex is good, it's unlikely that the marriage is in serious trouble. If the sex is not good, then you've got problems that are deeper than what meets the eye. And you can make of that whatever you want. If a wife comes in and she says, my husband's not interested in sex. And sometimes I'm facing that in counseling. My husband's not interested in sex. My reaction to that will be, well, he's either getting it somewhere else that he shouldn't be, or we need to see a doctor and have him checked out. If a husband comes and says, my wife's not interested in sex, the first reaction is, what we need to do is to get you more affectionate toward her. You need to show her more kindness. You need to do the things we talked about last night to show her affection outside of the bedroom. Because, you see, we're different about that. So, husbands, make it your business to communicate to your wife that she's all you need, that you don't need other women, that you don't need pornography. She's got what you need, and that you love her, and you share this, and the two of you celebrate your sexuality. It's a very private thing. It is just us and nobody else. And I reserve myself, both husband and wife, just for my spouse. Here's number four. Now, I don't know how much it cost you to come to this seminar. I'm telling you, it was worth it for this one. Wives, are there times when it's just not a good time? Well, I know the answer to that. You don't have to answer. Of course, the answer to that is yes. Sometimes it's because of a baby, and you keep a baby, your baby or your babies all day. Cindy and I went to visit a congregation recently, and I wasn't preaching. I guess we were on vacation, and there's this little woman mother who had two baby girls, twins, and they were babies in arms, and she knew us. And so before worship started, she just decided that we would love to hold her babies, so she handed them off. Cindy had one and I had one, and we held them for the duration of the worship, which was hard for me, because I don't guess I've ever done this. I work on Sundays, you know. But it was a great experience for me. Do you know, gentlemen, that eating the Lord's Supper while holding a baby is very hard to do? Do you know that? And do you know that bouncing and keeping the baby occupied and not fussing, that you're very self-conscious when the baby cries out in worship? Do you know that all that goes on? I'm telling you, I came home and got in the pulpit and I said to our women at West Huntsville, I'm so proud of you. I really appreciate you. I had no idea how hard this was. Sometimes at the end of a day, a wife, you know, she's bedraggled. And she's got spit up on her shirt, and there's some other stains there, and she doesn't even know what that is. And she doesn't feel very feminine. There are times, have you ever had a time when you ladies that you got ready to go, you had something you had to go do in town, and you took your bath or your shower, and then you did all your hair and the makeup thing, you know, and you're doing that last touch of whatever that is that you do, and you turn and it's your husband's off day, and he stands in the doorway there of your bathroom, and you look at his eyes and you think, oh me, I know what he's thinking. Are there times when you have a headache? Are there times that it's just not a convenient time for you. And the question, the big question is there a way to say no to your husband without doing a wrong thing? I mean, we just had a session on with the Bible saying to obey your husband in everything. Is it right? Is it possible to say no and not do a wrong thing? And not even, can you say no and not hurt his ego? Not hurt his feelings? If you just look at him and say, forget it, no, I'm telling you, you hurt him. You hurt him. But there's a way. Here's the way. And I want you to practice it. When it's not a convenient time, and don't do this every day, ladies, but when it's not a convenient time, I want you to look at him and say, I can tell what you have in mind. I want to be with you too. It's not a convenient time, but if you'll wait until 10:30 tonight, I'll make it worth your while. That's the secret. Now, how do you suppose he's going to respond to that? I can tell you how he will respond. He's the most understanding thing you ever saw. He's going to say, okay, that's fine. But now listen to me. I'm going to tell you the secret too. He's going to watch the clock. And don't you make it 10:31. Because I can promise you that when it clicks 10:30, he really thinks you're going to fulfill that promise, and you be sure that you fulfill the promise. And you won't hurt, you won't bruise his ego. You won't hurt him that way. You'll satisfy the fact that you'll show him that you love him and that you need him, but you will not hurt him this way. What about quick sex? And I know that I'm talking about very sensitive things. I just believe this is a context in which we should. It seems to me that we have license to talk about it here. So please allow me my freedom to talk about this. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. It satisfies the need in a busy schedule, provided that you don't make a habit of it. Don't do that. Because what's happening is that you will diminish the closeness that the two of you feel emotionally if you make that a habit. So from time to time, that's not bad. Here's the last one. Things you can change, how you prepare for sex. I grew up in a preaching home, and we had women rules. Every man ought to have women rules. But the preachers, you know, I mean, any preacher that has his head screwed on right knows the women rules. And they weren't written down, but I'm telling you, I grew up knowing the women rules. And the women rules go like this. You want to hear? I'll tell you a few of them. The women rules are, don't counsel a woman alone in your office with the door closed. Never do it. Never do it. Don't counsel a woman or be with a woman at the church building when nobody else is there. Don't do it. Secretary needs to be there. The door needs to be ajar. You know, I sat down with a woman for some counseling the other day, and it was very confidential. What you want to talk about was confidential. So as soon as we sat down, she hopped up and said, I'd like to close this, and she closed the door. But my body came up immediately, and I said, I tell you what, let's just leave this open. I want the secretary to be not where she could just sit and listen, but it's okay with me if I've got somebody, a woman alone in counseling in there, if the secretary pops in every little bit and says, Brother Collie, you need any pencils? No, thank you, I'm fine. You know, but we're going to practice safeguards. I'm not going to visit a woman alone in her home. Sometimes, you know, I the other day I was going to visit some couple that had visited our services and down into the apartment complex, and I couldn't find the right apartment. So I just picked up the phone and had the number on the card and called, and the woman answered, and she said, oh, I'd love for you to come by. Now, unfortunately, my husband's not here. He's in Alaska, but you come on by. I'd love to have you here. Well, I'm not about to go in there. Now, that is not a reflection on her. You understand that? It is no reflection on her. But we're going to put in these safeguards. Okay. So one of them is, don't talk about detailed sexual matters with the woman. Now, sometimes in counseling, I'll talk about sex with a woman, but I'm very careful. And when it gets to details, I'm just not going to do that. And I'll say, I tell you what, I think it would be better for you to have this conversation with Mrs. Collie. She'll be happy to talk with you and give you advice. And I've never had a woman buck that. They always understand it, and they're always good with it, and it's never a problem. In this case that I'm thinking about, I was speaking at a place where there were a lot of speakers at one time, some convention thing. And as I exited out in the corridor, lots of people out there, and a woman, after my session, she said, can I talk to you a moment? Of course, and we sat down. And I knew right away it was a problem in her marriage. Well, how can I help you? What is it? And she said, well, my husband doesn't brush his teeth, and his teeth are rotting. I'll never forget that woman's face and the pity that I had for her. How do you respond to that? They had what I guess was normal intimacy in their marriage. But can you imagine what that poor woman went through? Can you just imagine that? I don't know what I told her. I guess I just stuttered. I don't know. But I told you that illustration to say this. Gentlemen, nobody's probably ever said this to you before, but I'm going to. Take a shower. Use deodorant. Brush your teeth twice. Use a good mouthwash. Now, ladies, a lot of this is applicable to you. I'm not going to talk about that. But go ahead and share whatever is relevant. What I want to suggest is that you be presentable. What you do is prepare for intimacy. Your spouse is going to be so grateful. And right now, I don't know your marriage and I don't know your relationship. And it very well could be that your spouse right now is thinking, I'm so glad he's saying this because I hadn't the courage to say it to my spouse. Well, I don't have to be married to your spouse so I can say it. I want you to practice good hygiene. Sometimes a man will say, what do you think about me wearing a beard or not wearing a beard? Some of you ugly men have beards. I'm just teasing. I like your beards. But the answer, should you wear facial hair or not wear facial hair? This is really easy. What you do is you say to your wife, honey, do you like me better with facial hair or without it? And whatever that woman says, you do it. Right? She's the one, you're going to be touching her face with that thing. So is it best to wear cologne or aftershave during intimacy or not? Well, that's real easy. At a non-sexual time, you need to talk to your spouse about these kinds of things. Honey, what do you like the best? Would you like me with aftershave or not with aftershave? And let her, whatever she says, do yourself a favor and do that. I want you to make this as comfortable for her as you possibly can. And that's about considerate. There are some things about intimacy that you can do nothing about. And there are some things you can do something about. And I hope this has been helpful to you. This is our last session. I know that we've crammed a lot of material into a short amount of time. I want to tell you how much I appreciate your patience. I know that you won't be able to remember everything that we've talked about, but it would be a great, great success if there are two or three things and you could say, I'm going to do better about that. I'm going to show my spouse something better in reference to that. And I want you to remember how we started this seminar. You can't change other people. You can influence them, but you can't change them. Who you can change is yourself. Let what you've learned today be about you. Now, your spouse, I hope your spouse heard it too, but don't you be focusing on that. You will never get what you need in marriage by depriving your spouse of what he or she needs. You never will. I'll be good to her when she changes and she does... No. I want to close with this. Christians, we live in a triangle. You must always remember this because we think about our relationships with our spouses and with other people, frankly, as being a straight line. If you had $1,000 and I knew where it was and I knew I could take it and that you would never know it, what if create a scenario, it was safe that nobody would ever know it, I still wouldn't take your $1,000. I wouldn't. Why not? I live in a triangle. I mean, this is easy for me. I wouldn't touch his money because it's not just between him and me, is it? It's between God and him and me. Your marriage is like that. You must think that way. I don't be good to my wife just because I want to motivate her to be good to me. Now, that's true. I do want to motivate her to be good to me. But I'm good to her, too, because I live in the triangle. And it's not just a straight line. And God cares about the kind of husband that I am. He cares about the kind of wife that I am. Let's pray. Thank you, O Lord, for this time we've been able to spend together and for this thing called marriage and for all the ways that you've blessed us. We know that marriage is complicated and the two genders are so complicated as you've created them that it's a great adventure to go through life and to get to know somebody at the level that we can know the person with whom we become one flesh. Help us, Father, to do it well. Help us to be humble in spirit, kind and tender-hearted and forgiving. Father, help us to appreciate that we're not going to be here very long and that we need to work hard to make a good marriage. Father, bless our homes and forgive us of our sins. In Jesus' name, amen.